Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, VeritasMedical.com. Check out that website for archived programs and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's VeritasMedical.com. And let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, Wade. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm looking for that third Johnson & Johnson shot to protect me from the Delta variant of the Chinese virus. What do you think, Doc? Should I get it?
Please don't ask me these kind of questions, Wade. I'm just kidding. I'll take it.
Anyway.
I asked my wellness navigators who were on a few weeks ago talking about grains and carbs and what about keto versus eating carbs and all that. And, you know, we've had lots of questions amongst our patients about that, and some patients a little bit freaking out. So I told the navigators, hey, put out a Q&A on our private Facebook group to all our patients. Whatever questions they have about carbs and bread and all that, I'll answer it on the radio show this morning. And so they put out the Q&A, but most of the questions, or half the questions, were about vaccines. And that's pretty much the constant question we get emailed to our clinic. It's about the Delta variant, COVID stuff, vaccine stuff, mandates, masks, so, or blah, blah, blah. It's wearing me out.
I bet it is. It's wearing a lot of us out because the scare factor is also being, again, once I was watching, I guess, ABC air quotes news, yesterday evening, and it was talking about 22 states have seen a significant increase in the Delta variant of COVID, and these are basically Midwestern states that have not had enough vaccines. So we have to vaccinate a lot more,
yep.
Possibly even going to door-to-door, at least knocking on doors and saying, we're here from the government. Have you had your vaccines yet? If not, here's a place you can go to get it free. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there going on as far as this is concerned. And even some chatter in some circles about, well, maybe we ought to look at lockdowns again.
Yeah.
I mean, this is going pretty crazy.
Okay. Wade, while you were saying that, besides banging my head against the desk, resisting the temptation of banging my head against the
okay.
I typed in the definition of propaganda.
Oh,
I'm
really?
I'm just going to read this. The systemic propagation of a doctrine or cause or of information reflecting the views and interest of those advocating such a doctrine or cause. A second definition, material dissemination by the advocates or opponents of a doctrine or cause. And then a third definition talks about the systemic propagation of disinformation. If anyone's still watching corporate news, corporate media, and getting any information from there, then they need to understand this definition of propaganda.
Absolutely.
I mean, I would encourage people, if they haven't, go look at Project Veritas, unrelated to Veritas Medical, except for we're both plowing into the truth, I think.
Right.
But Project Veritas had a couple of reporters from local news stations. There was a local CBS reporter, I believe it was in Houston, and a local Fox News, I think in Michigan, possibly. Both of these ladies came out, and one was a meteorologist for the local station, and another was just one of the reporters. And they both came out as whistleblowers, basically, with Project Veritas, saying that they are dictated from on high what they can and cannot say. I mean, the corporate giants who own the media, which I don't have all those stats, maybe you do.
I do.
But
companies today, there are five media conglomerates that own about 90% of the media in the United States, including newspapers, magazines, movie studios, radio, and television stations.
Yes, that's it.
Five.
Right there.
They own it all.
And if you can control those five, and I wonder, maybe you could do a little research during the break. Who are the number one advertisers on those five, and how's the financial link between?
Boy, I already know the answer. Pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, there you go. Go dig the link up between pharmaceuticals, the traditional media, like you just said, the social media, put them all together, but then overlay FDA, CDC, WHO, NIH, all this funding. I mean, I don't know the exact quote I read it this weekend. FDA, it was like, I don't know, $41 gazillion. It was a whole lot of money that the pharmaceutical companies have to pay the FDA to get. It's just part of the licensing fee.
Right.
And it's the most corrupt thing in the world. So if people are not connecting the dots, and probably our listeners are, that's why they're listening to this show. But people need to understand when their neighbors or coworkers or they do listen to any conventional news source, they have to understand there's a bias. Everybody has a bias. And I've stated my bias many times that I believe God's real. We didn't evolve out of nothing. There's a creative God who created us. And he created us perfectly, and our immune system's awesome if we steward it. So that's my bias. So back to the Delta variant. And I said this a long time ago. And believe me, I'm not the smartest guy around. I listen to the smart guys. You know, Dr. Peter McCullough, who's finally getting some airtime a little bit.
Didn't you guys go to the Senate and testify together? He was there or not?
No, there are some other doctors that came to the Texas Senate. Dr. McCullough went to the U.S. Senate.
I got you. Okay.
But he and I communicate often, text, email, phone calls. He put me on a group chat on Telegram with all these, he calls it the COVID-19 expert channel. It's a private channel. But it's these amazing doctors from around the world. Most are U.S.-based, but there's some from around the world. And these are like top-notch, you know, MD, PhD, multiple degrees, academic physicians, Harvard, Yale, etc.
Epidemiologists.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are amazing. And this is where I get my news. These independent, and the thing about Dr. McCullough is amazing, really. And Dr. Mercola, the holistic, number one natural medicine website in the world, Dr. Mercola, interviewed Dr. McCullough, and it was so interesting to see McCullough, who's a cardiologist and internist. He's an editor of two major journals. He's the most published cardiologist in his field, which is cardiorenal, heart, kidney disease. He's an academic physician, Texas A&M Medical School at the Baylor campus in Dallas. So, I mean, he's as academic and conventional as you can get. Completely polar opposite to Dr. Mercola, who's a natural doctor and a DO and a family physician. But it's so interesting to see Dr. Mercola coming to the truth and standing for the truth in such a setting of conventional medicine and academia and such a pharmaceutical conflict of interest. And McCullough published a paper. It's the most downloaded medical paper in the last year. And it was August of 2020 he published it. And it was on outpatient treatment using multi-drug therapy, hydroxychloroquine and steroids and azithromycin.
Got banned on YouTube for it.
Yeah, banned, all that. But the point is, it's been a year. It was August of 2020 when that publication came out in the Journal of American Medicine, I believe it was. The most downloaded medical journal article in the past year. And Dr. McCullough said last week, to his knowledge, there's not a single medical institution, university-based medical school system or any like Scott and White, any system, Kaiser, you name it, that has implemented his protocol or any similar protocol. I mean, hydroxychloroquine's got now over 200 hardcore studies proving efficacy. Ivermectin's got over 65 studies proving efficacy. And his point was they just are not penetrating into the institutions. Now, independent doctors are picking it up and using it, but institutional, so that's what people have to understand. There's so much money at play between these institutions, whether it's an educational institution, a news corporation, a government institution, these health institutions. There's so much power and money at hand. And so we just have to understand that. So Delta variant's been around, I mean, I read in Florida in January, it was 15% of Florida was Delta variant. So we talked about variants a long time ago, and basically what I said in general with all these respiratory viruses, whether you're talking influenza every year or coronaviruses or whatever, they mutate. I mean, that's just, everybody knows that. Even non-doctors know this. There's just mutations. That's why they do a different flu shot every year. They try to guess what's the mutation, what's the variant going to be this year for the flu shot, and they guess, and they put two or three different strains in there. Sometimes they guess right, sometimes they guess wrong. So, I mean, people are familiar with this. So these respiratory viruses mutate all the time. Hundreds or even thousands by now of mutations of this COVID-19. The mutation, so when we say mutation, we're talking about a gene that gets altered or changes. gets expressed differently. And so certain mutations will cause a virus to be more transmissible. It'll be easier for it to transmit and infect a cell. I think my junior high kids would understand, hey kids, there's a virus, but it's going to change itself to many different kinds. And the kind that can get in your front door easier, it's going to replicate more, right? It's going to become more dominant. Yeah, of course.
That's the Delta variant.
That's the Delta variant. And it was, before we called it Delta, it was the India variant. I mean, it's been around a long time. We've studied it. And we've seen countries that have dominated. So it's gone from 2% to 90%. Why, I mean, how can it do that? Because it's the most transmissible. But as almost always, historically, looking back, when these respiratory viruses mutate to more transmissible, they're also less lethal. And that's exactly what we're seeing. We're on the radio show. I can't show graphs. But you can graph this huge rise in COVID-19 Delta variant from 2% of the variants being Delta to 90% of all COVID cases, like in the UK or in India, Israel, some of these countries that have had it for a while. And you see this huge increase, 90% of all the COVID is Delta, and hospitalizations and death, no change at all. Total flatline. It's not as deadly. It's less deadly. It's more transmissible, less deadly. There was a June 18th UK technical briefing. Also, I want to mention that 42% of these Delta variant folks were fully vaccinated. So it appears clear that the vaccine, and I've looked at other studies too, and it's about 50-50. This Delta variant, it doesn't matter. If you're vaccinated, unvaccinated, it's hitting the people the same way. 50-50 everywhere you look. So more transmissible, less deadly, and vaccination doesn't matter.
Is that why Johnson & Johnson at the top of the hour, Fox News, is petitioning the government to go for that third shot to protect against the Delta variant?
I'm sure that's the line they're using. But
that's the logic, right?
It's not based in science.
Okay.
Any science that I've seen.
Well, but the apparently, from what I understand, that the Johnson and Johnson, because you had the Moderna, you had the AstraZeneca, but AstraZeneca wasn't here in the United States. But out of the four vaccines that are floating around out there, according to the NIH, that the Johnson and Johnson vaccine was the best vaccine against the Delta variant, from what I understand. Then Johnson and Johnson, you know, they get the support of the NIH, which is Fauci and crew, and they go, oh. Well, it is if you can get a third shot.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
Follow the money.
What is that? I mean, three times mRNA put into your body in a very short time, and especially if you already had the disease and had natural antibodies, does that alarm you as far as from a health perspective of what could happen with the cardiac stuff and everything else going on? I mean, this is what's confusing for not only me, but for a lot of people who try to stay informed and see what's going on. But I think this is really shocking people because they're concerned about this.
Yeah.
When you have that type of technology, again, it's FDA emergency authorized, not been approved by the FDA. And we're all sitting here scratching our heads going, okay, doc, what should we do?
Yep.
Good question.
What you should do is rely on your God-given natural ability to fight these viruses. Because the big picture, COVID-19, less than 1% mortality rate unless you're old and, you know, above 80.
Okay, what if you are 70-plus, let's say?
Then it's still 95 to 98, depending on, you know, your comorbidities. So everyone needs to just remember that, number one. Number two, if you steward your immune system, then you'll shrink that percentage even more. And number three, ivermectin, multiple studies show as a prophylactic treatment, some studies it was 100% effective versus 0.8% for the vaccine. That's what, going back to the vaccine, the original Pfizer data and Moderna data, when you look at, did it decrease transmission? You know, So I went camping this weekend, was with a young man. He was like 22, 23 years old. He's back from college waiting to get into law school, and he was hanging out with some old college buddies, young people, you know, out of college, supposedly highly educated, and these young friends of his were vaccinated, and he just started going through the list with them because he listens to the show and he's an educated young man. He said, so did you know the Pfizer data, when that emergency authorization got approved, it didn't show a decreased transmission? And the kid was like, what? That's why I got the shot, so I could go see my grandma. What do you mean? It doesn't prevent me from spreading it? Nor does it prevent me from catching it? He was shocked. And then he was mad. Why didn't anybody tell me that? And then he said, and by the way, there's been 9,048 deaths reported to VAERS. That's Friday's data that got released, which historically VAERS only reports anywhere from 1 to 10%. Who knows what the true number is? But 9,000 is what's reported. 438,000 adverse events, almost 27,000 hospitalizations, 7,000 disabled. And, I mean, this is the tip of the iceberg, I believe. I'm going to see a patient tomorrow, a young, middle-aged lady, healthy, not on any drugs, no formal prior medical history, is a teacher. She went to do her civic duty and get vaccinated because she was told to by everybody. And now she's permanently disabled and will never teach or walk again. That's what her doctors are telling her. I'm going to see her tomorrow and we'll see. But she's in chronic pain. Her legs quit working and she's in excruciating pain that requires morphine. Onset immediately after her second dose. I'm hearing so many of these reports. The miscarriages reported in VAERS, 985 miscarriages, but New England Journal of Medicine published study, 82% miscarriage rate if you get the shot in the first trimester. That's New England Journal of Medicine. When patients ask me, is there any evidence that this mRNA is going to be broken down enough and quickly and not spread through the body? Is there any evidence the spike protein will stop being produced at some point? And I can't point to any evidence. There is no evidence that that's true. We don't know how long the spike protein is going to be produced over and over and over and over, which it's the spike protein that's the deadly, you know, that's what drives all the endothelial inflammation and the heart attack, stroke, blood clot.
In young people.
Yeah.
That's happening in young people.
Data out of Japan showed this mRNA is congregating in the spleen and the ovaries and other places. But it's obviously not staying in the deltoid muscle. It's moving throughout the body. And when I look at this study where a huge amount of this mRNA is collected in the ovaries, what's the impact going to be on fertility? I don't know. There's no long-term data. I can't tell you. And for a young person, you know, say less than 20 years old, who has statistically, I mean, it's zero. 0.000000 chance of an adverse outcome or death from COVID-19. It makes absolutely no sense. But hopefully people are moving past this cognitive dissonance of just, I mean, it'll drive you crazy if you sit there and continue to watch and listen to conventionally minded and corporate-sponsored news outlets, because you're just going to get a spin. You're not going to get the full truth. I mean, when you read through these independent news sources, and you listen to the scientist, you listen to the guy that invented the mRNA technology.
I saw that. I saw him interview.
And he says we're making a huge mistake. When you listen to Dr. Michael Yaden, former vice president of Pfizer, when he has repeatedly come out and said, we're making a huge mistake, stop immediately this vaccination program. And Dr. McCullough and Dr. Risch and Dr. Zelenko. I mean, Dr. Zelenko up in New York. He was one of the first ones. His Jewish community that he treats, it's like 20 or 30,000 people that live within like a, I don't know, one quarter of a square mile or something. Real densely populated area in New York. And so his community started getting hit hard first right out the gate last year. And he immediately went into action. He called the hospital to see who's showing up at the hospital. It's old people and it's people with comorbid conditions. So he immediately knew that he didn't need to worry about. I mean, he was in a triage type situation. So anyone that called his office without medical, had no medical history and was less than 50 years old, he just told them stay at home and treat it like the flu. He treated over 3,000 people in that first few weeks. And he went to the literature and quickly saw hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin and steroid, I believe it was. So the Zelenko protocol. And his mortality rate, I mean, he treated like 3,000 patients in those weeks, and I think two or three died. But you would never hear that on the corporate media. And that's been out for over a year now. And he's out there beating the drum. He's had 20 deaths from the vaccine that he can't even get into VAERS. He's tried to upload them to VAERS, and it rejects them. So the safety monitoring's not there. Dr. McCullough's beating the drum on that. Dr. McCullough is on safety monitoring boards for multiple different medical devices and drugs. He's part of this FDA system when a hospital or a university wants to bring something to market or a drug company, you have to have a review board that looks at the safety data. And Dr. McCullough's been a part of these review boards. There's not one for this. I mean, we're going to roll out a new experimental gene-altering technology and not have robust safety monitoring, weekly reporting. This VAERS, that's a self-reporting system that's obviously, I mean, I listened to one doctor last week, 200,000 reports behind that they just haven't been able to roll out publicly on the website. They're so bogged down with these reports. But again, you're not going to hear any of this. If someone was listening to only conventional news and then tuned into this program, they're going to think I'm crazy. Like, what is he talking about? And that's my point, is you listen to independent news and you're getting a 100% polar opposite story than what you're hearing from corporate. And, I hate to say it, money, money, money. Everybody, do you know anyone who, if you went up to them today and said you're fired from your job, isn't going to have a little panic attack kick in? I mean, everybody needs to keep their job. Everybody needs provision. They need a roof over their head. They need clothes, food. They think they need lots of other things. I mean, once you start living up to a standard of living, the threat of losing your job is a very powerful and coercive, almost as big as the threat of losing your life. So the fear of death and the fear of lack of provision, huge. And I don't care if you're, a national news anchor, down to local news anchor, down to doctors, And Dr. McCullough, I mean, he's calling out all these doctors. He's basically saying, where's your backbone, where's your spine, and where's your independence? He's convinced there's doctors in these institutions, which the majority of U.S. medicine now is big corporate institutional medicine. It's not independent doctors. And he's convinced a lot of these doctors do know, but that very thing about provision, if they speak up or raise Cain, they're going to be labeled, they're going to be in some way.
Well, especially with this administration, my goodness. I mean, they have made it very clear that they're going to do everything that they can to try to reach 70% vaccination rate throughout the entire country.
Yeah, that should be huge red flags. And I didn't mention, we were talking earlier, and we're almost to the break, but natural immunity. And we said this weeks or months ago.
Months, actually.
When you have natural immunity, when there's a little variation, a variant, big or little variant, you're going to be fine. You're going to be totally protected. Now, vaccination does not equal immunization or immunity, obviously. It's clear. It's not on this Delta variant doing anything. So if you've had COVID naturally, no worries at all. They looked at SARS-CoV-1. Back in 2002, they found those survivors who are still alive today. And, 17 years later, they checked their blood. They looked for antibodies, T-cell immunity, all that. And they still had immunity 17 years later to the original SARS-CoV-1. But then they also had immunity to SARS-CoV-2. Even though it was a 20% variant as far as the genetics, 20% difference in the genetics of CoV-1 versus CoV-2. And the variants we're talking about now, all these different variants of COVID-19, you're down in the 0.5%, 1%, 3% tops, I think I've seen, in change in the genes. So if you've had COVID naturally, COVID-19, don't worry at all about the variants. If you haven't had it naturally, still don't worry. No matter what, don't worry, because fear and worry is going to compromise your immune system more than anything. If you've had the vaccine, but now your mind has been more educated, like this lady I'm seeing tomorrow, she's really sad, and I'm sure beating herself up. I've so many people calling. We had a lady walk in, like, in panic mode. Y'all have to help me. She had the vaccine. She's having an adverse reaction. This is 2 months later. She wasn't having an emergency. But just seeing the fear in her eyes that she made this huge mistake. What did she do? Get this mRNA out of me. Get the spike protein out of me. I don't know what to do that. I can't do that. But what I will tell anyone is, if you feel like you made a mistake and you based a decision out of fear, then repent for that. Talk to God about it. Repent, ask for forgiveness. You trusted in a man and an institution and science, and you put science in place of God. If that's what you did, you know, the Holy Spirit could lead somebody to get a vaccine. I'm not saying that's not possible. But all the folks I've talked to, it was fear, fear, fear. And how could you not be with the propaganda? But that's number one. Repent, get your heart right. Number two, trust the body. If you're not walking in fear and you're walking in faith and peace and joy and truly walking in the Spirit, your body can do amazing things. I mean, we're going to have Dr. Lorraine Day on hopefully soon. Her body did such amazing things when she got her heart right with unforgiveness. It was in her heart. It wasn't fear, but for her it was unforgiveness. And her stage 4 on her deathbed hospice breast cancer went away from getting her heart right, is what she'll tell you. Her testimony is, the body never ceases to amaze me when you line it up with the truth. And so mostly I'm talking your thoughts. Yes, you need to eat God food, not man food. You need to move around a little bit every hour, not sit all day, and you need to be well hydrated. So that's number one. Anyone that walks in our office freaking out that they made a mistake on the vaccine, get your heart right, then get your physical right. Extra add-ons after that, it's a total guess. You know, probably I'd do ivermectin because it binds the spike protein up, keeps it from attaching to your ACE receptor to get into the cell. So probably I'd consider ivermectin once a week prophylactically. And probably I'd put you on some pine bark tea or extract and then some dandelion leaf extract. There's 2 different studies I've looked at that show those also inhibit and block that spike protein. So there are some things that you could consider doing, but it just as soon as I mention those, I guarantee you, people walking in fear will just, they will put 100% of their focus on dandelion, pine bark or pine needle extract, and ivermectin. They'll put all their hope and trust and faith into that. Or anything else I say. Do some ozone, do some ultraviolet blood irradiation, do X, Y, or Z supplement. High dose vitamin C, come in weekly for vitamin C infusion all the way through the winter. They will absolutely latch on to that and put all their hope and trust and faith in that. And that's a mistake. All that physical stuff is secondary. Secondary to get your heart right, steward your health through those 4 pillars, and then all that other is like extra icing on the cake, not the reverse. And that's what got us in this situation in the first place, is we flipped everything, put all our hope and trust and faith in these drugs and pharmaceuticals. And that's what we're going to talk about when we get back from the break. Except I think I do have a couple more questions I'll try to answer quickly. But then I want to talk a little bit about where we got off track. Thousands and thousands of years, health care providers, I'll call them, worked with the body's natural healing abilities for thousands of years. That's how it's been. In the past 100 years, we've gone down this chemical-based, synthetic chemical pharmaceutical-based approach, and we've become the sickest society in the history of the world because of this. So we need to come to grips with the reality that we submitted to pharmakia, as the Bible calls it. So when we get back from the break, we'll talk about that, some of the history of medicine, and then I'll answer a couple more questions that we had. So y'all stick with us. I'm Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out the website veritasmedical.com for archived programs and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's veritasmedical.com.
All right, Wade, a few questions. One of them I kind of hit already. It was, with these new variants showing up, would it be recommended to start ivermectin as a prophylactic? So I think we covered that already. These new variants, more transmissible, less deadly. The original was not that deadly anyways. If you steward your health and depend on your age and your risk factors, you don't need to do anything, but just do what you do. I mean, even if you get it, it'll be a cold, no big deal. If you are high risk, older, and have multiple medical conditions, yeah, I'd definitely consider it. Dr. Pierre Corey, the COVID-19criticalcare.com, go to their website. They have all the data there. They track all the studies coming out on ivermectin as far as prophylaxis, and I mentioned 100% success rate. That was, I think, out of Argentina. But anyways, all the studies are there. COVID-19criticalcare.com, Dr. Pierre Corey, print them out. Take the studies to your doctor, and I would consider that if you're high risk. Next question was graphene oxide. Have I heard that there's graphene oxide in the vaccines? Yes, I've heard that. I'm not really prepared to comment on that. This is research coming out of Spain, and it's a university-based research. These professors seems to be pretty legit, chain of custody. They got, I think it was 100 vials of Pfizer and AstraZeneca. Appears that chain of custody was maintained. Law enforcement officers were involved in maintaining chain of custody so that it's an authentic material. And they've done electron microscopy on the contents of it. And I think they're doing further testing. And that's what they're saying. That's what these professors, who, again, they're more educated and expert than I am in toxicology. And that's what they're saying is in all these vials that they're looking at. So I'm following that and just don't have a lot more to comment on that. I know Stu Peters, his news program, is following that closely. So can't really comment on that. If that's true, which it appears it is, graphene oxide's a poison. It's a toxin for sure. It should not be consumed by humans ever, much less injected directly into the body in nanoparticles that take it immediately into your capillaries, so immediately into your bloodstream. That's a game changer. No one should take the vaccine just based off that if it's true, and it's breaking news. So, all right, next question, which is more where I wanted to go today, so we'll shift gears. So is raw dairy and fresh milled bread less inflammatory, or can they be just as inflammatory but more nutritious? Well, definitely they're more nutritious, no doubt about it. And I think it's going to be a case by case. My nurse practitioners and PAs they kind of start rolling their eyes these days. Well, not just these days. I've been like this for a long time. Every question they ask me about a patient, they tend to look, they're looking for a canned answer and a one-size-fits-all answer and a protocol answer, basically, because that's what medical school and PA school, nurse practice school teaches us, protocols. Someone has hypertension, here's step 1, 2, 3, what you do. You draw this blood, you get an EKG, and you start this drug. Next, diabetes, here's what you do, step 1, 2, 3, you do this blood, you do this urine, you start this drug. Next, reflux, step 1, 2, 3. It's a cookbook. That's what medicine is. It's a cookbook these days. So human beings just tend to go that way anyway, especially Western-minded, intellectual, rational thinking, science-trained people. And there's not a one-size-fits-answer when it comes to human beings. We're all individual and unique, uniquely made. So I'm going to give a general answer here. Raw dairy and fresh milled bread should be much less inflammatory. For sure, it'll be less inflammatory in someone who's well. In someone, and well primarily being they're not in fight or flight mode, they have good microbiome. Those are the two big definitions of well to me when it comes to can you handle certain foods. Well, question number one, if you're in fight or flight mode most of the time, then no, you're going to have trouble with most foods probably eventually. And definitely if conventional dairy and bread are driving inflammation now, and you just switch to raw milk and fresh milled bread, it could still drive inflammation if you're still sick, meaning you haven't addressed your fight or flight mode, so your stomach acid levels not appropriate, you're not acidic enough in your stomach. That would mean your gallbladder and pancreatic enzyme function is suboptimal. It would mean you have delayed gastric emptying, possibly. It means your peristalsis is not normal, and it means the pH throughout your intestine is not optimized to encourage good microbiome health, good diverse bacteria in your gut. some people think about the digestive enzymes that human beings make, which we make a few, a handful, amylase and lipase and protease and the hydrochloric acid. So we can break down some of the foods. We make a handful of enzymes to break foods down, like the milk and the grain, the gluten. But the bacteria, they make dozens and dozens and maybe even hundreds of different enzymes to break these foods down. There's 94 different strains of gut bacteria that break down gluten. So if a patient has those, fresh milled bread will be less inflammatory for that patient if they have this diverse microbiome with all these enzyme-producing bacteria to break the foods down, to break the lactose down, all the different proteins that could be pro-inflammatory in these foods. So to me, the question's more, how's your overall health, your microbiome health and your stress health, those two things. But, I think the heart of the question is, you know, if a person's had trouble with these, with dairy and bread, conventional dairy and bread, could they switch to what I'd say is the God version? Because the general rule of thumb is eat God food, not man food, but eat it in as close to the form that God made it as possible. And dairy and bread, conventionally grown and produced and put on a grocery store shelf, are not real close to God's original form. It's almost like not even the same category of food. A fresh milled piece of raisin bread, like I ate this morning, my wife made over the weekend, versus raisin bread I bought at the store, it's like a elephant versus a mouse. I mean, they're so different. They're not even the same category. So God food versus man food, and as close to the form as God made it as possible, should not be inflammatory if you've taken some time to heal your leaky gut and diversify your microbiome. So that leads to another question. Has Veritas changed their philosophy in, regarding bread? So let me tackle that real quick. Maybe not real quick. We have to step back and understand that a more holistic approach to a person's illness by doctors who have diversified and broadened their education and done continuing education in the realm of nutrition and other complementary and alternative, I'll put that in quotes because that's the legal term that the Texas Medical Board recognizes, complementary and alternative approaches to medicine, which are legal, recognized by the state. Doctors who have pursued further education and knowledge can use these different modalities. First, you offer standard of care, which is pharmaceutical-based medicine, which is only treating the symptom, which results in never addressing root causes, which results in we have the shortest life expectancy of any country, industrialized country in the world. 54% of our kids have a chronic medical condition now. Adults, pretty much everybody has a chronic disease. Everybody's on more than one pharmaceutical. After age 65, it's like three to five pharmaceuticals is average. We spend more money than anybody. But that's a standard of care from 100 years ago. The Flexner Report we'll get into later. We shifted into treat symptoms with pharmaceuticals, chemicals. So now doctors and patients are clueless that there's even an option to fix your hypertension, fix your diabetes, fix your reflux, fix your ulcerative colitis, fix your rheumatoid arthritis, which the doctor's actually not fixing it. That's the name of the show, You're the Cure. Your body will fix itself if you put the right nutrients in and bring the stress down and the right hydration, etc. Kind of went off on a tangent there. But standard of care. That's your standard. So our standard, could use an expletive there. I have to catch myself. Our standard of care, it gets the worst results in the world, but that's what we're held to, standard of care. But if a patient refuses it or has failed it, and then we can move on to complementary and alternative medicine, a.k.a. address the root cause. Now, there is a green version of just treating symptoms. I've talked about it before. You can use berberine for your diabetes instead of metformin. If you had too many side effects of metformin, fine, we can put you on berberine. It's an herb. You won't have the diarrhea that metformin induces. You won't have liver and kidney issues if maybe you have those with metformin. Berberine won't do that. It's natural, doesn't have those side effects. Great. It works, you know, head-to-head with metformin. It works just as good at keeping your blood sugar managed pretty well. But you're still managing your diabetes. And our goal is to reverse it, have your body reverse it. Don't have diabetes anymore. You don't need the berberine. That's where you want to go. So let me put that caveat in there. There is a green version. Everybody, and that's what most people coming in think they want. I don't like pharmaceuticals. They're the devil. Give me a herb. Give me a natural product. And that's okay. I mean, I'm not a herbalist. I don't know all the different supplements out there in the world. There's patients sending me questions about supplements. I have to go look them up. The patient knows more than I do about it. I don't know all these different supplements. But there are tons of studies out there that are being done on various nutrients and supplements. You can go down that road. But I encourage people to only do that as a temporary bridge to address the root cause. And so that brings us to using food as medicine. That's where this conversation was starting. What do I think about bread and carbs? Have we changed our philosophy? Well, we use food as medicine, like Hippocrates said. So if someone comes in really inflamed, standard American diet for 30 years, 40 years, and they have ulcerative colitis, and it's out of control, and they're on their Remicade, and it's not working, it's breaking through, they've had 10 colonoscopies in a row, and they all look horrible, and they're going to have their colon cut out. Yeah, I'm going to say quit eating bread. I'm going to say don't eat any grains, actually. No corn, no wheat, no rice, no grains, period. And I'm going to say no sugar, any. Definitely not processed sugar, but not even honey and maple syrup, the God version of sugar. No grains, no sugar, and then I'm going to say no fruit. Well, fruit's a God food, right? Yeah, it is, but I'm using food as medicine in this particular circumstance. This patient is so inflamed. Anything that could drive inflammation, and for my personal bias, it's carbs and sugar that drive most of it. Could other things do it too? Yeah, there's functional medicine doctors out of Cleveland Clinic. They train people to do an elimination diet, so they would also take out caffeine, they take out alcohol, they take out eggs and dairy. So there's various elimination diets where you just take out these foods that are potentially driving inflammation. But just my personal bent is let's narrow in on grains and sugars just because I have a personal history. That's how I got trained. I saw lots of good results. We've have thousands of good results, thousands of patients with those results. So that's the initial approach. Now, what I learned recently, haven't even shared this with my nurse practitioners yet, your body, when it's in inflammation mode, your macrophage, which is part of your immune system, it's like your Pac-Man that go eat up the bad guys, and they also get activated with trauma. So like if I burn my finger at the campfire this weekend when we're camping out, or if I, you know, run and I stub my toe and I have a bruised toe, or you're in a car wreck and you have trauma will initiate these macrophages also, just like germs will. So trauma and germs hit the body, these macrophages activate, and they go into M1. M1 mode is pro-inflammatory. Pro-inflammatory means they're going to be squirting out all kinds of free radicals, oxidative stress, all this, all these grenades and flamethrowers. Inflammation. They're purposefully doing inflammation to kill the bug or to basically break down the traumatized tissues. You get a bee sting, same thing. You're going to go inflammation mode to break down the toxin, the venom, but also to break down the cells that got damaged that are no good anymore. They got damaged by the venom. So M1 is good. We need to be inflamed for these particular reasons. But then you got to flip to M2 state. And the M2 state is the anti-inflammatory and the healing state. Well, almost everyone that walks through our doors is stuck in M1. And it's not because they just got stung by a bee or have strep throat. They're in a chronic state of inflammation like ulcerative colitis. Their body is stuck in M1, and they can't budge out of that. And there's various reasons for that. But to mount the M2 response, the anti-inflammatory response, that is a high-energy state. And that macrophage has to flip into beta oxidation, which is fat-burning metabolism. You have to get into fat-burning metabolism to create the 140-plus ATPs per molecule of fat that we talk about all the time. You got to get your miles per gallon up there to kick that anti-inflammatory thing off. M2 runs off high-energy fat beta oxidation. So anyways, that's the philosophy. It's been the philosophy. We are not changing that. It's always been that way. Here's the rub. People get that initial anti-inflammatory effect, most people, the vast majority, in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, they are way better. Way better. especially coming in, if they haven't been sick that long or their disease isn't that bad, you know, if they're just metabolic syndrome like diabetes, hypertension, and reflux, I mean, that's almost like guaranteed they're going to be way better to even completely reverse their disease in a short period of time. That's when we need to, using food as medicine, shift and consider cycling between carb burn and fat burn. I believe we need to be able to do both and quickly go back and forth, back and forth. If I get overwhelmed with a big whopping dose of COVID right in my face or some other germ right in my face, I want to be able to shift from M1 to fight it, but then shift into M2 to heal. We need flexibility. And I believe that on this whole spectrum of diets, from vegetarian all the way over to carnivore, and everywhere in between, whether you're talking Whole 30, you're talking paleo, primal, down to keto, carnivore, we should be able to cycle up and down that spectrum. I should be able to eat a purely vegetarian meal for a day. If I feel like eating nothing but out of the garden today, it's hot, I'm sweaty, I don't feel like a big steak, and I just want to have some okra and tomatoes and salsa and a good chip fried in the right oil, like coconut oil, that's all I'm going to eat. If that's a vegetarian meal, that's fine. I'm not going to be anti-vegetarian just because I want to be anti-vegetarian. That's a problem. We put these diets up on a pedestal as a religion almost, and we put all our hope and trust and faith in low carb and keto is going to save me, or vegetarian is going to save me, or carnivore is going to save me. All of them are okay if they're God food, but going to the extreme and making it an idol and staying in keto for 2 years in a row, or 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and your ketones have to be at a 3 and you measure them every single day, you're too focused on it. You've moved food and diet into a position in your heart where only God should be. That's called idol worship. And we don't think of it as idol worship, but that's what it is. When we're so honed in and focused on anything other than God, whether that's ivermectin for COVID, or that's a supplement because I'm going to be all natural, or that's a diet because, you know, you just decide to make a diet your God. That's where we have to be careful. So, did we swing or preach too much keto or too much low carb for a long time? Possibly. Our messaging maybe could have been more tight, where we could explain it more. Hey, when you're sick and inflamed, yes, low carb, grains and sugars off. But then as you heal, consider cycling in and out, in and out. And so fresh milled bread is awesome. Your ancestors ate fresh milled bread. It's full of nutrition. The guys at the campfire this weekend, one of the questions was, if you're stuck on a desert island, only had one food, what would it be? And for me, it was a toss-up between all the raw milk I could get, because that has all the nutrients you need. It grows a calf from a 100-pound calf to a 500-pound calf in a few months. Raw milk versus the fresh milled grain. If I could have fresh milled bread every day. And if I could have two foods, that's what it'd be. It would be butter straight out of the cow, raw butter, preferably from cows eating rapidly growing green grass, because that has more nutrients in it and that transfers to the butter. But if I had just that and fresh milled bread, that'd be awesome. And if I'm on a desert island, I'm going to be pretty peaceful. Because I will be unplugged from all the news that's pumping out the propaganda. So I hope I'm answering that question. I know we're running out of time to go into the history of medicine and how things have gotten so far off base. I just want to encourage people in the diets, quote-unquote diets, use it as medicine. And if you're really inflamed, probably you're going to need to cut your carbs way down, including the fresh milled bread, but then bring it back in once you're better. But then alternate. Don't make fresh milled bread your God either. You know, let the Holy Spirit lead you. In some seasons, you'll be eating, you know, fruits and veggies out of the garden. Some seasons, you may be eating meat all the time, but it needs to be quality sourced. All right, the future show, we're going to talk about this. And I've read this quote before. This is from July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, 1946. Cancer research hearings before a subcommittee of the Committee of Foreign Relations, United States Senate, 79th Congress, second session. So they were talking about a bill to authorize and request the president to undertake to mobilize at some convenient place in the United States an adequate number of the world's outstanding experts and coordinate and utilize their services in a supreme effort to discover means of curing and preventing cancer. That is what the Senate hearing was all about. Who did they call? Of the world's outstanding experts, one of them was Dr. Gerson, Max Gerson, who had immigrated in from Germany during the war. And he presented 10 cases to Congress. I'm looking at this book of 50 cases is where I'm reading this out of. So go look up that Max Gerson, that what he presented to Congress. Again, July 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 1946. Here's a quote from 1944, Smithsonian. This is an annual report of the Board of Regents of the Smithsonian Institution. For the year ended June 30th, 1944, United States Government Printing Office, Washington, 1945, publication 3776. Quote, under the universal microscope, disease organisms such as those of tuberculosis, cancer, sarcoma, typhoid, so they took out some germs, and others may be observed to succumb when exposed to certain lethal frequencies peculiar to each individual organism and directed upon them by rays covering a wide range of waves, end quote. And what's that talking about? It's talking about the Royal Rife machine. Raymond Royal Rife developed a microscope that has never been duplicated. He could observe these microscopic organisms live. Our electron microscopes today that take a picture of viruses and bacteria, they kill the bug and then take the picture. He could see them live. But what he did was record that each germ emits a certain frequency or color on the spectrum of color of human light that our eyeball can register. He basically came up with a periodic chart of all these different colors of all these different germs. They each have a unique fingerprint of frequency. And he figured out how to transmit an opposing frequency that disintegrated the germ. Kind of like when an opera singer hits a certain pitch and it shatters the glass. Same concept. This is Raymond Royal Rife machine. And this was the Smithsonian talking about it. And there were 16 cases of incurable cancer on their deathbed, treated at various clinics, including John Hopkins. They had five famous cancer doctors from around the country go to San Diego to Royal Rife's laboratory and observe this procedure. All 16 cases in 3 months were declared cancer-free by these same institutional John Hopkins, etc. doctors. Amazing. Max Gerson and Rife back in the 1940s. And I'm just pointing out some things here that maybe there's some things out there that we haven't been completely educated about. Here's one. Well, we got to wrap it up here, so real quick. 60 out of 60 cases of polio cured within 72 hours with high-dose injections of vitamin C from 6 grams up to 20 grams per day with no residual effects. And that is from Dr. Klinner, Southern Medicine Surgery Journal, July 1949. Last thing. This is George Mann. George Mann's the director, co-director of the Framingham study, the biggest study. All doctors know about this study out of Framingham, Massachusetts. It's what's got the whole cholesterol heart hypothesis going. Quote, the greatest scientific deception of this century, perhaps of any century, by this is, he's talking about the cholesterol heart attack hypothesis. The greatest, perhaps the greatest scientific deception of the whole century. That was George Mann, co-director of Framingham study. My point is there's a whole world, a wide world of therapies and research and amazing stuff if you go back in history of the annals of medicine, historical studies, and go through them all. It's incredible. We've been funneled down a pharmaceutical-only trail, and look where it's landed us. So when you hear that on the news, nothing but pharmaceutical ads and vaccine ads, you need to raise your eyebrow a little bit, consider some things, get more diverse source of information, get some independent journalism going. Wade Wilkes, thanks for the radio show, being here, the radio station being here for some independent voices. And then weigh it out. Decide. Maybe you are supposed to go the pharmaceutical route. Maybe a vaccine is the best thing for you. Maybe it's not. We're a free country. We should have medical freedom. What's best for you and your individual circumstances, you and your family, go figure that out and pray on it and do what you think is right. Don't do it out of fear, coercion, or propagandized anything. Okay. I think that's it, Wade.
Well, it's all good stuff. And, of course, you can, if you just now picked up the end of the show, you'll be able to pick it up on VeritasMedical.com. You're the Cure, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Again, archive programs right there, VeritasMedical.com, and other important information to help you regain control of your health. Dr. Edwards, you have a great rest of your week. We'll see you back here next week on You're the Cure.
Thank you, Wade.